Welcome to Beyond the Buzz with Brendan Osborne. In each episode, we dive deep with high-performing entrepreneurs, world-class athletes, and those whose existence make this world a better place. They walk the walk, they talk the talk, have knowledge through experience, and let their success make the noise. Thanks for joining us today. It's time to reach your potential.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. Today, we have joining us Brett Robinson. So we actually shot this one right before he was taken off to the Rio Olympics to work with the athletics team over there. Had some huge successes over there with his team. This one, I do a little bit of an intro within, so we're going to jump straight into it today. But I would just say, really take note of this. The way Brett approaches his life, some of the experiences he's had will shift your perspective on things massively. You should really, really just think deeply on the way you view your world and your life, and there's huge lessons and gems all the way through this. So enjoy the episode, guys, and we will get into it now. Thanks for joining me on the podcast today. And as we've just introduced, we have Brett Robinson. So many cool things to get into today. I'm really excited about this one. We're going to get into some cool stuff on gratitude, our mission, helping people. It's going to be a super, super cool podcast today. So Brett, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Brendan. I'm extremely grateful to be chatting to you tonight. I love what you're doing and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Thanks, mate. And thank you. So from the moment we've connected, we've just been connected recently, the word gratitude not only comes from yourself, but everyone that I have engagement with that talks about you. So what is gratitude to you at the moment, Brett?
Gratitude to me is, it's more of a state of being. So when I learned about the power of gratitude and I started to express gratitude, I started to experience a different emotional journey. And it's not just a word, and you don't just express what you're grateful for and, you know, hope that that makes you feel better. It actually is a shift in your physical state. And I think the power of gratitude lies there, because when you're in a state of, in a beautiful state of being grateful for things, you can't be operating in a state of fear. So too often in society, we all operate from majority of the time from a place of fear instead of a place of love. And often we're making major decisions or trying to make major decisions from that place of fear, and we're not operating optimally from a place of love. So gratitude has a really deep, rootful meaning for me to help shift me into that beautiful state that I can operate from a place of love.
So you said learning there, like when did this shift start to take place for yourself? Was it something you started reading? Was it information? Was it life experiences? When did you start to notice, or was it something that you've had your whole life? What really made that shift, and when have you learned it?
Definitely not something I've had in my whole life. I wouldn't say that I've been ungrateful, but I've never actually on a regular basis expressed what I'm grateful for until probably the last 12 or 18 months. And I was exposed to it through, I'll call him a mentor of mine, Lewis Howes, who has a podcast himself, and I listen to it a lot.
Yep.
And he talks about the power of gratitude and expresses gratitude a lot. So I was exposed to it from that.
Yep.
And I will admit that I'm addicted to podcasts and listening to a lot of other podcasts and hearing that, you know, a lot of the world's most successful and most influential and inspirational people talk about the power of gratitude and how it works for them and expressing gratitude. So I've started implementing it on a daily basis where literally as soon as I open my eyes, after I turn off my alarm, the first thing I'll do before I even get out of bed is express three things that I'm grateful for.
Yep.
And I can tell you right now that that puts a massive smile on my face before I even get out of bed, regardless of whether I've had an awesome 8 hours, which I try and strive for all the time, or whether I've had a pretty patchy sleep. Expressing that gratitude in the morning just shifts my energy straight away, and I'm in a happy state bouncing out of bed straight away. And as you would know, if you call me and I don't answer, then my voice message asks people to tell me what they're most grateful for. And that's, so I see that, I know how it makes me feel, so I can try and encourage other people to be grateful for things in their life, because I know how it can also make them feel.
That's cool. And what I would just ask then, how would you get someone, like obviously you've had a really strong attraction to this and you've put the practice to work, I'm sure there's a lot of effort in there, to someone who doesn't naturally feel that way or isn't attracted to it, they wake up and they're like, okay, I know I need to think about a couple of good things in my life. There's this, there might be a relationship, or there could be a child or something like that, but there's no real feeling towards it, and, or it doesn't transcend beyond that. Can you give any tips to things that you think about, or do you pull things from your environment? Where do you go with that?
I think the important thing to remember is it's a skill. And like with any skill that you learn in life, regardless of whether it's for your personal life, your sporting life, your career, school, whatever it is, skills take time to, they take practice before you actually start to get the maximum benefits from them. So for people who aren't really feeling anything, I would say stick with it and start to express with belief. I would also say that you don't need to try hard to look for things to be grateful for. Mm-hmm. So sometimes in the morning, I'm grateful that I had a good sleep. I'm grateful for the bed that I wake up in, and I'm grateful for my health. Other times, if I've had an awesome evening or day or week with my family or friends or my gorgeous girlfriend, I'll wake up and that's on my mind, and I express gratitude for my relationships. And so I'm not searching for things. I'll just say a few things to sort of start the day on that trajectory, because also, you know, if we're not expressing gratitude, we'll be asking ourselves questions, and the quality of our lives is directly related to the quality of the questions that we ask ourselves. So if people are having difficulty finding what they're grateful for, then maybe you should start to ask yourself questions like, what am I most happy about in my life? What am I proud of right now? How can I make someone else proud? And that sort of starts to create the more positive trajectory for your day as well.
And is this something that you say out loud, or is it just in your mind, or both?
It's completely up to the individual. And I'll tell you what, I do a lot of it in my mind, and I say a lot of it out loud as well. But I was actually, to get into the practice of things, I had a whiteboard in my room, and my girlfriend and I would actually write a lot of questions for the day in that regard. What am I most proud of? What am I most happy about? What's a goal that I'm ready to achieve? Different things like that. And I would actually answer it. And because my girlfriend is Swedish and I'm trying to learn the Swedish language, I would also answer it in Swedish too. So it became a bit of a mental challenge at the same time, which is really cool. But it's something that, like I said, it takes practice. So for people who are in an environment where they don't want to or they can't say it out loud, you can ask those questions to yourself. Just find what works too.
Okay. So you mentioned goal setting there. Is this something that you put a line with your gratitude? Is it a daily practice, or do you set goals?
I don't sit down and write goals specifically and say, these are my goals. I was an athlete, and I'm a coach now, and I understand the importance of goal setting in that regard. And I highly recommend people to set goals. But I find for myself that I like the term mission, and I put myself on missions. And there's obviously process goals and end goals with those missions. But the biggest take home for goal setting, I think, is for people to identify the why, not just the what, but the why. So if you've got a big goal to achieve something, like you say, if it's in sport and you want to run a marathon, don't just have that as the end goal. You've got to identify with yourself why. And when you can connect your why with your end goal and your purpose, that's when you're going to have more of a connection to the whole process of it.
Very cool. And so for you at the moment, this will be a two-part question. What is and what would you say your career is, and what would you say your mission is?
So I'm a full-time sprints and jumps coach for the para athletics program employed by Athletics Australia. And I'm also a soft tissue therapist and performance therapist, and work with some elite teams like the Sydney Swans. I'm based in Sydney and have worked with the ACT Brumbies in the past. And I was doing that full time for 5-6 years, and have been coaching now full time for 5 years. And I've integrated the two together to implement that performance therapy aspect. So I was an athlete. I was a sprinter for a few years at the AIS, and was studying at the same time to become a soft tissue therapist. And as an athlete, I sort of saw a few gaps in the process of athletes would train their butt off at the track, and then you would go into a clinical environment to get massage or physio work, and the therapists weren't actually at the track, you know, watching our movement patterns and seeing how we move through our daily environment and executing our skill all the time. Then I became a full-time therapist, and I was working with athletes, and I moved up to Queensland. I was working with the AFL and rugby league teams up there, and also travelling as a full-time therapist with some different Australian Paralympic teams such as track and field, wheelchair rugby, and the winter snow ski program. And so as a therapist, I started to see some gaps where it wasn't quite right that the only time we would see the athletes was in this clinical environment. And then when I became a coach and I saw it from a coaching perspective as well, the gaps became even clearer because I now had the knowledge of an athlete. I had the knowledge and the skill set of a therapist, and then I was in the coaching seat. And I really wanted to learn how to integrate my coaching and my therapy much, much better, because I knew that it needed to exist to give the athletes the best opportunity to perform optimally as often as they can. And that actually made me reach out and found the World Athletic Center over in Phoenix, which is now called Altus, and they were offering internships over there. And I was lucky enough to receive an internship, and wasn't until I arrived that I realized they only take a few interns per year from around the world. So it was hands down the best investment I've ever made. And it just, I was over there in an environment that I couldn't believe actually existed in our sport in track and field. It was unbelievable. And I was surrounded by some of the world's best coaches, some of the world's best therapists, and some of the world's best athletes and world record holders at the Olympics and those sort of guys. So being in that environment and just learning from the best, practicing on the best, it really took my skill set to the next level. And I'm actually really proud to say that performance therapy is a skill set of mine. And that's in, to explain the performance therapy, it's sort of like trackside therapy for me, where it's not something that athletes need treatment all the time, pre, during, and after training, but the skill set is there if there's a little niggle, or if I see them moving inefficiently and I can identify where it's coming from, we can jump on it quickly before it actually escalates, before they're walking into that clinical environment with therapists and we're trying to put out fires, that it's too late, where I can jump on it early enough.
And are you ever seeing stuff like, I'm picturing an Olympian getting ready for an event or doing a couple of warm-up drills, are you seeing any faulty movement patterns or things that you can act on right there to enhance their performance?
Absolutely. I can guarantee right now that no elite athlete in the world is bilaterally moving perfectionally through their movement patterns. It just doesn't exist. And when you get to that level, it's because of, you know, people have leg length differences, people have previous injuries, people have niggles. When you're pushing your body to its absolute limits day in, day out, there's going to be imbalances. But what we can do, what you can identify and what you can help to improve, you can then help to improve it. You're not looking for perfection though. So yes, we watch the Olympics now and you can definitely identify things. You're never going to get that perfection point, but you can always make it more optimal.
And to go to the other part of the question, what is your mission and how does that differentiate from a career?
My mission is to help as many people as I can achieve their goals and at the same time fulfill my own potential. And the way that that's different from my career is that a coaching job is very giving. It's all the time you're thinking about and giving your knowledge and skill sets to your athletes. And it's not a 9-to-5. You don't switch off when you're at home. You're programming, you're thinking about different things to implement. You want to make sure that your athletes, that when they're not at training and not in your camp environment, that they're doing the right things too. It's definitely a 24/7 mindset sort of job, which I love. That's the power of it. But my mission to help as many people as I can achieve their goals has sort of grown over the last 12 or 18 months, where I've realized some of the skill sets as a coach and a therapist, and especially when we touch on mindset and mental resiliency, there's a lot of aspects of sport that I want to take into the non-athletic population's lives. And that's why my mission is to help more people achieve their goals. And by that, I mean, we talk about the belief effect, we talk about mindset, we talk about the visualization and how we can use those sort of skill sets in our lives when we're not trying to be Olympic athletes. And the other part of that mission where I say I want to help as many people as I can achieve their goals, but at the same time fulfill my own potential, so that they're part of my mission is to make sure that I am operating as an optimal human in every aspect of life, because the better human being I am, the more I can help people, the more of an impact I can make.
And we'll jump into health in a little bit. So on a daily, we'll say daily practice, or even across for the week, do you ever make time for yourself? If you're constantly giving, constantly pouring out and all this information, and also physically like manipulating, like so much energy putting out, What do you do to recharge?
Absolutely. And this took me a little while to grasp fully, but I now invest in myself heavily because of that reason I was just saying, how the better operational I am, the more of an impact I can be on people. And this, I was lucky enough when I started my coaching career at the AIS, at the Institute of Sport in Canberra, I was a scholarship coach there. And they ran programs a few times a year for all the scholarship coaches. So you got AIS hockey, basketball, track and field, swimming, diving, all those sort of sports. And we get together and they put on professional development for us. And a repeated message that I heard from these people was that you have to make time for yourself as a coach because it's such a giving job, and you'll see coaches always burn out. And we had lots of examples of coaches, their relationships fall apart, all these different things that just really didn't resonate with me at all. So when I kept hearing this message of make time for yourself, make sure you keep your health optimal, make sure you're still doing things that make you who you are, I thought, well, that's pretty easy for me because that's who I am stepping into this role. That's who I always want to be. So if this is something that's coming from the professional development aspect of an Australian Institute of Sport scholarship position, then that's something I'm going to jump on board with. And to be honest, when I first started it, it was pretty surface level sort of stuff, and it was just more about sort of healthy eating and making sure I'd exercise. But now I've really delved deep into a lot of things, and I invest in my own life coach who's also a functional medicine expert. And on a daily basis, I have a lot of alarms that go off on my phone, a lot of reminders that help me tap into the gratitude side of things, to the emotional intelligence side of things. And it's that depth of those areas that's really allowing me to take things to the next level and also work with. So I work with in a mentoring capacity for a lot of people outside of sport, and it's all these things that I've learned, taken on board, practiced myself that I can then share with a wider community.
So let's jump into functional medicine. So you see someone once a month, once every few months. What types of things are you doing there, and what do you take? And yeah, give us the down on that.
Well, so my life coach is also a functional medicine expert, and we touch base once a fortnight. Sometimes when the schedule is really busy, it might push out to 3 weeks, but we try to keep it as once a fortnight. He has really helped shape my understanding and of functional medicine, but of optimal health. So I always knew that in sport, I just don't completely agree with the nutritional advice that is given. I think it's very, here's your instant energy. Let's not think about the long-term effects that are happening to the body with that. And that's the way I went through as an athlete and then just staying in the sporting world. And it wasn't until I reached out to Carl, who helps me in this regard, that we've really taken things to the next level. So he actually got me to do a urine sample that we sent to America because they don't do the testing in Australia. As an organic acid test, and it came back with some results at a cellular level to tell me how my body was operating and what fuels it was taking in better than others and areas that I need to improve on. And from that, it was a real shake-up. Oh, not a real shake-up, but it was a really clear guidance for me then to say, all right, I've been a healthy eater my whole life, but I really need to make some changes here to live optimally for the rest of my life. And my end goal is to live till I'm 110 and be running when I'm 110. So that's also why I invest so heavily into my health. But he was able to identify areas that we needed to work on and put me on a pretty heavy supplement protocol for 30 days. And then we've sort of weaned off, and I'm still on some good supplements that I believe in that I not only hear from him, but a lot of other health experts around the world that also recommend some supplements. And it really has boosted my immune system, I've noticed. I haven't even been close to being sick this winter, and I've been around a hell of a lot of sick people. It's also expanded my mental clarity and also obviously my awareness of the gut microbiome and long-term health in every area.
So what was a couple of the things that you were lacking in it, and were they surprises to you?
My body was having trouble. So I shifted from I never have been much of a carbohydrate eater, but I shifted on to the high fat, low carb diet.
Yep.
And
why did you make that shift?
I heard about it and I did a lot of research about it. And once again, through my addiction to podcasts, I was listening to people like Tim Ferriss and the interviews he does with Dom D'Agostino and these human guinea pigs that are doing the actual lab test to see what this ketogenic diet is doing for you.
Yep.
And it just made so much sense to me. The more I researched it, the more I liked the aspect of it. And so I started to implement it in my own life and sort of make that shift. Once again, the high fat or the ketogenic diet is really good for obviously optimal living, but for longevity. And like I just said, my end goal to be living till I'm 110 and be running at that age, I want to be the best human being possible in every aspect, in every health aspect. So yeah, to making that shift, it was hard. There were some dips because obviously my body had to adapt to relying on fat as the main fuel source and yep. good fats, obviously. And when we got the test results back, it showed that my body was actually having trouble using fat as its main energy source. So it explained I was getting a lot of cramps and some really low energy levels in a time where I was training pretty hard myself as well. And so we were able to identify that as a sort of a weak link and get on top of that. And now my body can process it so much better and I don't have those dips and I'm actually thriving off this diet the way that I was hoping to be.
And how long did it take you to push through that initial adaptation and get through the dips?
There was definitely a period of close to a month where I was flatlining and not able to handle the training sessions that I used to handle. And not that I'm training for any sport or anything, but I always train quite hard. And after that month, I sort of got to a level where I was handling it again. And then I took my training to the next level. And once again, I couldn't handle that. So that's when it sort of all fell into place in time with these tests once the results came back and we got on the supplement protocols and all the changes started to take place.
Okay, cool. So we tapped a little bit into the physical practices and really getting yourself in the best physiological state. You also mentioned mental resiliency. How can or how have you developed that in over the past 2 years, 18 months?
Yeah, mental resiliency is a real interest area for me, and I encourage people to or challenge them to want to be as mentally resilient as possible. When we look at what is mental resiliency, in sport we talk about, and this comes from having worked with some of the world's best coaches and world's best athletes in Australia and internationally, it's about being in the moment. So if an athlete is performing a task, let's say if they're running a race and they're thinking, well, let's say pushing a race. I know you interviewed the legendary Kurt Fearnley. If Kurt's pushing in a race and he's thinking, geez, last time I did this race, I didn't go so well and I didn't finish where I wanted to and I felt like crap, I hope I don't race like that. He's not in the moment. He's living in the past. Or if he's pushing in that race and he's thinking, I can't wait to finish this. I just hope that I finish where I need to finish. He's not living in the moment. He's not being mentally resilient. He needs to focus on the time at hand because you cannot execute to your 100% capacity if you're not in the moment. So mental resiliency in sport means being in the moment. When we talk about non-athletic populations and you and I that aren't trying to achieve Olympic gold medals, mental resiliency in our own lives is it's about bouncing back from adversity or failure. So it's about having the courage and the belief and the skills to bring the pieces of the puzzle back together. And this is something that I've learned through experience over the past 18 months from experiencing massive adversity in my life. And it's only from these experiences and understanding that we can use adversity to our advantage that I've been able to really understand the mental resiliency and the emotional intelligence realms to the level that I do. And I still feel like I'm only scraping the surface, but I look back and before I'd experienced this adversity and I really had no idea, didn't know what emotional intelligence or even emotional awareness was. So I guess to paint the picture of how I've got to this point, I grew up in Cobar in Western New South Wales, and it's a very, very small community of about 5,500 people. So relationships there are strong. You jump on the push bike for 5 minutes as a kid and you're at your grandparents' place, you're at your best friend's house, your best mates, you're spending quality time with them and their families all the time. So it's like you have an extended family all over town, cousins in town, relationships are really strong. We're really proud for where I grew up in Cobar, actually, hence why my Twitter feed is, my Twitter name is actually Brett Robbo Cobar and my Skype name is Brett Robbo from Cobar. I I hope to make people aware of the awesomeness of the little country town of Cobar.
I did go to a few knockouts out at Cobar, actually.
There you go. See, it was the best of us out there.
They had a really good field out there, actually.
yeah, the football field was done up for the Tui's Challenge years ago, so it's one of the best out west.
Yep, definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah, and growing up out there, I was played a lot of football myself and did a lot of track and field and had to travel around the country, obviously, for that. And as I got a bit older, I was traveling a lot with my grandfather, and he was actually my first proper athletics coach. He took me on in year 9 at school through until I finished school, because he realised that he had no idea about coaching, nothing about track and field, but he knew that if he didn't take me on that I'd probably give it away and play footy, and he saw a bit of potential in me, so he took that on. And we used to travel the country together. We'd drive from Cobar to Tasmania, Cobar to Adelaide. We'd drive Cobar to Brisbane, often drive Cobar to Sydney. Wow. So we spent a lot of quality time together.
Yep.
And he and my grandmother, two of the most influential and inspirational mentors of my life. They always happy, always smiling, always loving, kissing, cuddling, whispering sweet nothings into each other's ear. They taught me what love is, and they taught me what respect is. And not by saying, hey, Brett, this is love and this is respect. It was more by their actions and by their behaviours. I was very inspired by them growing up and how they interacted with each other. And they were both very successful business people and amazing community members. And the pride of being their grandson, just from that alone, and seeing how much of an impact they could make in the community, that's why they're two of the most influential and inspirational mentors in my life. And I mentioned before that when I went over to the World Athletics on an internship in 2014, hands down the best investment of my life and having one of the best experiences of my life, and my girlfriend Marie, who's a race walker, she was also there joining me as an athlete. We were there in the sixth week of it, and I received a phone call from my brother, who was living in Canada at the time. I woke up in the morning and had a lot of missed calls and messages from the family. There seemed to be a bit of urgency about it, and I received the news that my grandparents had been murdered back in Cobar. So the two most influential and inspirational mentors of my life were murdered in their own home. And the processes that followed that, it was the most gut-wrenching emotional journey that I've ever been on. I've never lost anyone close to me before. I've lost grandparents and great-grandparents before. The grandparents passed away when I was a tiny kid, so I didn't have a connection with them. Never lost anyone close to me before, so I'd never experienced this heart-wrenching sadness. I honestly couldn't control it sometimes. And I wouldn't say that I started to lose my passion for my job, my coaching job that I absolutely love. It was just that I couldn't really concentrate on it. I went through a period of time where I would be taken into this journey of sadness that I couldn't control and didn't know where it was going to take me. I was very fortunate that with my work, Athletics Australia and the Swans offered their help in the psychology departments, and I'd done some work at the AIS previously with some of my athletes with a psychologist there and had a good connection with her and really respected her. So I reached out to her. And I still remember Brendan sitting in the first session with her. She knew the background of my grandparents' case, and we spoke about it for a bit, and she said, Robbo, it sounds like part of your life has ended. And I said, well, yeah, Kate, I guess it feels that way. And then we continued to talk about that for a bit, and I explained how I've never lost anyone before and I didn't know what these emotions were, how they were controlling me and what to do about it. And she said to me, you know, Robbo, you're going to become more of a whole person after going through this experience. And I just looked at her and I smiled, biggest smile on my face. And I said, Kate, that's the best thing you could have ever said to me, because all I ever want to do is be the best human I can be so I can help other people be the best humans they can be. So if I can look at this adversity in my life as an opportunity to grow from, learn and prosper, so I can help other people grow, learn and prosper, then that's exactly how I'm going to tackle the situation from here on in. And that was honestly one of the biggest turning points of my life. And from there, I started to reach out to her a lot more in regards to what books can I read for these processes that you're teaching me? What areas can I tap into to help me with my mindset, with my emotional intelligence, with my mental resiliency. So she helped guide that a little bit. And then through podcast world, I don't just listen to a podcast. I often take notes on a podcast, and I'll essentially study it, and then I'll research the things that they refer to, the books that the people have read. So it really has put me on an emotional intelligence journey, I guess you could say, and it's really broadened my horizons in so many areas. And I'm extremely grateful to say that I can utilize those skills that I've built on from that to help with my athletes and also with the general public population that I work with in a mentoring and coaching capacity as well.
So, yeah, that is one of the most horrific things, definitely, and unique things that one person could ever come across. So the fact that you can take a situation like that and then not only flip yourself around, but quickly think about how you could use it to help others is just such an amazing thing. So for you to do that, I just have to say that I'm even grateful to be here talking to someone like that and to have someone like that even briefly in my life. So I appreciate that you exist, Brett, really.
Thanks, mate. That's very kind words. And I think the big part of that was too that when it happened, it was my mother's parents and our siblings got together. I got an older brother and a younger sister, and we just said, and my dad, and we all said, whatever mum needs, we're there at the drop of a hat, because her daily life changed because she worked for them and she spent quality time with them on a regular basis, whereas all of our siblings had been living away for quite a while. So our relationship was still strong, but it didn't impact our daily lives.
Yeah.
And to be honest, my mum has grown massively as a person and has become the rock in the family and shows so much strength and pride for what she's doing. But all these skill sets and everything that I've just spoken about, to be able to help people like my mum and my siblings as well on this tough journey, that's where a lot of the power of it comes.
And out of re-educating yourself or more pulling on information to use to amplify and help yourself to grow and help others, what out of that would you recommend as a really strong source for someone else who potentially is going through a tough time and not being able to almost have that conversation with someone to flip their perspective or to get their self traction and moving out of it, to someone stuck in that? What would you recommend a good source book podcast would be for them?
There's a book by Sam Harris called The Happiness Trap, and I highly recommend that if someone's feeling in that stuck situation and they don't have the experts to talk to, I would highly recommend that book. It will take you on a journey like you've never been on before if you delve into that book, and I guarantee it'll help. There's many podcasts out there. I can't actually think of any off my head at the moment, but that book is a great starting point for people. And just to help people clarify why emotional intelligence or emotional awareness is important in their lives, it's because we need to understand that the process of our mind is that our emotions are actually dictated by our thoughts. So we know that our thoughts cause our feelings, which lead to our actions or our behaviors. But too often, we as human beings, the first thing we experience is our emotions, and then we react to our emotions, as opposed to understanding that when we have an emotion, it actually comes from a thought first, and we can act on the emotion, not react to it. So we understanding that our thoughts create our feelings, which create our behaviors or our aura, is a really powerful thing for people to help them shift and get unstuck. Because when you get that emotion of anxiety or stress or depression, understand that emotion that you're feeling is coming from a thought. So you might not have even realized what that thought is, but take a step back and then acknowledge those thoughts and realize, okay, I'm thinking anxious thoughts or I'm thinking stressful thoughts. And then you can create skill sets to actually help you stop thinking in that regard. Another powerful thing to remember for people is you don't have to think of your thoughts as positive and negative or your emotions as positive and negative, but you can think of them as helpful or unhelpful. And so when you get those emotions or those thoughts of anxiety and stress or depressed, you can catch yourself and think, well, is this helpful in my mission or my goals, or is this unhelpful? Is this helpful for myself and the people around me, or is it unhelpful for myself and my health and my people around me? And when you can start to catch yourself and think in those terms, you start to realize that there's a lot of noise going on in your head that you're actually entertaining and letting grow that is very unhelpful, and it stops us from taking the path of the helpfulness and creating those emotions, those euphoric emotions, those happiness, the pride, all those sort of ones that can really help us strive towards excellence. We can actually create those emotions by putting those type of thoughts into our mind.
And is there anything that you do when and we've all been there where the brain does go on a tangent and, like you said, it grows and the thought stream links into another thought and it really keeps these feelings alive? Is there anything that you do to snap yourself back into awareness or into presence to stop that thought stream?
Yeah, there's a few skill sets that I play around with, and one of them is I don't like to just cut those thoughts off. I think that's a really hard skill to develop, where when you realize that you're thinking unhelpful thoughts, just trying to cut it off, because then that actually makes people think about it more. But what I tend to do is implement a couple of little skills, and one of them is actually, it's pretty cool. It sounds crazy, but you change your thoughts into ridiculousness. Mm-hmm. So if I'm having thoughts of that, you know, I'm useless, I'm a failure, I didn't achieve what I was out to achieve, and then I catch myself and then I say to myself, well, that's interesting that my mind's telling me that, but I know that it's not true because I'm actually doing great things for many people. And then I start to shift those thoughts into ridiculousness. So, or complete opposite, but ridiculousness might be turning it into a cartoon where it then expands into a massive pumpkin that then melts down into delicious lint chocolate. I'm on my hands and knees shoveling this lint chocolate into my mouth because I love it so much.
That's cool.
And then all of a sudden, just like what you did, you have a little giggle and you realize those unhelpful thoughts, you can really just shift your energetic state from that simple little skill. And like I said at the beginning of the chat, that, you know, it is one of those skills that you've got to practice. But the more you practice it, the more you realize you have the power to think whatever thoughts you choose. And yes, there is thoughts coming at us all the time, but we have the power to either entertain those thoughts or to dismiss those thoughts. And identifying whether they're helpful or unhelpful will help you realize whether it's worth entertaining them or dismissing them.
You were talking about the massive adversity and how that has made you grow. This is something that I commonly ask people, and I'd love to hear your feelings on it. Do you feel that someone can make the amount of growth and that holistic approach or that shift towards growth without the adversity?
Absolutely. And that's actually part of my mission, is to try and expose people to these skill sets and ways that they can implement them into their lives before they have to face adversity. I shouldn't even say that, because we all do face adversity. We all have faced adversity. It's just at different levels.
Yep.
In our lives. And no matter, it's not the circumstances that happen to us in our lives. It's not the situations. It's not the good things or the bad things. It doesn't matter what actually happens in our lives. It's what we do from those points in our life and from those experiences and from those situations and how we learn and grow from them and move forward. So I think it's really important that you highlight this, because I don't want people to think, well, I haven't really experienced massive adversity in my life, so, you know, I'm not ready for that, or I don't really know what he's talking about, because these are skill sets and strengths that some of the most influential and inspirational people in the world implement on a daily basis to help them become successful without having faced adversity. So the mental resiliency and these mindfulness tricks and not tricks, tools, and understanding the belief effect and the power of it all is, if you haven't experienced massive adversity in your life and you can implement these things, imagine how strong and ready you'll be when these things do face us. Because reality is, we're all going to face some pretty tough and shit times in our life. And to have the skill sets to help you get through it is a fundamental of life, I believe. And that's why I want to sort of expose people to this and help them understand how they can tap into their inner excellence and what it actually means.
And do you have people that you're working with, or do yourself in this learning and growing process? Is it reflective work? Is it writing, journaling? Is it what is it?
A lot of it is with my life coach, Carl, who I was telling you about before, who also is a functional medicine expert. But we do a lot of the emotional intelligence side of things and a lot of these skill sets together, and he gives me some good homework, and there's a lot of good reflection. processes. There's a lot of reading and a lot of listening to podcasts once again. But it's also, I find different avenues that really interest me at the time, and I delve into them. And so I actually really, really enjoy the journey.
Yep. And so how do you stay with or taking on all of this information podcast? How do you stay proactive on your mission and taking action in your business and working in with your clients? How do you balance that out?
Better than ever before, I feel like it's all in line with each other. So in that regard, it's more of the only thing that is hard to juggle is time.
Yep.
But the rest of it is things that I'm really passionate about. And I've taken on the mantra of recent months that giving is living. And that's with that in mind and taking those steps, the feeling of giving makes everything worthwhile. And my mission of giving and making an impact in the world is just growing day by day, because the more I give, the more it makes me feel awesome, the more impact I can see that it's making, and the more help and gratitude for other people it's creating as well. So the juggling act is only time, I would say, and the rest of it is so gratifying that it makes it worthwhile. And my exposure to the giving is living, I have to credit the legendary Tony Robbins for that, because he often talks about it, and I've heard him on so many podcasts. And then to hear him say, you know, a few times, if there's one thing that I encourage everyone to feel, it's the feeling of giving, and that giving is receiving. And I started to sort of implement those practices. And, you know, that came about from, I do a bit of work with a charity, non-for-profit organization called Batir, which is a youth mental health organization, and they aim to smash the stigma of mental health, and they do amazing things and saving and changing people's lives in the mental health area. And they were wanting to set up a program out in Cobar. Oh, sorry, they'd been running stuff out in Cobar, and they wanted to set it up for a 2-year plan. And they were heading out to raise funds and asked if I could come as a connection to Cobar and Batir, which I thought would be great. And they identified to me before we left that there was a shortfall per year to run these programs, even with the support of the mines and the money that they'd raised. And they wanted to encourage the community to be creative in ways to raise funds. So I actually went and created a limited edition shirt for my company, Life, which is Living Intentionally for Excellence. And I thought, if I can sell these shirts and donate 100% of the profits, I might be able to make a little bit of an impact on the money side of things, but I also might be able to encourage and challenge the community to be creative to help raise more funds for it. And I did that, and I actually exposed that to Batir in Cobar when I was doing one of my Tapping Into Your Inner Excellence presentations in Cobar, which was an amazing experience to be able to go back there and speak and have that little bit of an impact. And I didn't do that many shirts, but I raised $3,000 in profit, and I thought it felt amazing to be able to give $3,000 to a charity that helps save and change people's lives, but also to the Cobar chapter of that charity to help strengthen the mental health of the youth in and the whole population of Cobar. And it was just a really awesome feeling to be able to give that little amount and make that small impact. And I thought, if I can do this on a bigger scale, I think I know what Tony Robbins is talking about. And I'm a big person on affirmations, and I'll create a lot of affirmations, and I'm a very optimistic guy, Brendan, and I create very big visions. And I started just saying to myself, Life, my company Life, is donating hundreds of thousands of dollars to charity. Life is donating hundreds of thousands of dollars to charity. And I liked the feeling that it created just by saying it, and I wasn't quite sure how I was going to achieve it, but I knew there was possibilities. And that sort of leads me to what we've created at Life in the campaign of Life Tees.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just checking out those tees now. There's a couple of good ones. I'm looking at the Scotty Uriden, the Grateful Tee. So, yeah, tell us about this project.
Actually, funny enough, I've just looked down and I'm wearing the Scotty Uriden Grateful Tee. I support all the athletes with it.
I'm literally ordering one right now.
Oh, legend. I love it. So Life Tees is, we have teamed up with elite athletes, and they've chosen a charity that's close to their hearts, and we've worked together to design a t-shirt design, and we're selling those and donating 100% of the profits to their chosen charity. And the idea of that is that obviously I work with athletes and mostly Paralympic athletes, also with Olympic level athletes on the performance therapy side of things. And them identifying the charities that actually mean something to them, that have played an important part in their lives or that they really support, that resonates with them. And we are allowing them to give back to the organisations that mean a lot to them. So it's a real whirlwind of a gratifying experience here. And you mentioned Scotty Reardon. So his design is actually, Scotty was 12 years old and working on his family farm in Tamora, and his shoelaces were undone and got pulled into the back of the rotary hoe on the tractor, and it chopped his leg off. And he, being out 50 k's or maybe more out of Tamora away from any medical support, the Snowy Hydro Southcare helicopter actually came and amputated Scotty's leg on site and took him to the Canberra hospital and literally played a big part in saving his life. So when we engaged with Scotty, he obviously chose Snowy Hydro Southcare, and he designed this tee that's got a helicopter on the front that is the model of the Snowy Hydro Southcare helicopter. And then on the back, we have his actual running blade that we had a picture of it, and we put it into a program and turned it into a sketch, and we printed that onto the shirt. And there's a chain going from the helicopter onto the blade. So he, talk about gratitude, Brendan. He's extremely grateful that he's able to give back to the organization that helped save his life. And from my perspective and from the team at Life Tees, we're extremely grateful that we've developed a platform to help situations like this, to help athletes like Scotty and Sarah Walsh with her campaign, and Brandon Stark, the national high jump champion, to help these guys actually give back to these organizations that mean so much to them.
Yeah, that is so, so cool. So I know you're heading off to Rio soon, is that right?
Yes, we actually leave at the Gold Coast at the moment with a few athletes. We're on camp here, and then we leave this Saturday to go to Florida, and we've got 10 days in Florida, and then head down into Rio for the Paralympics.
Very, very exciting, mate. Well, we're going to wrap it up there. I'm going to definitely get you back on the podcast. We'll wrap up again after you've been to Rio, and I'm sure you'll have a heap more cool things going on, and the giving process will grow. So where is the best people who are listening right now, where can they go to find these t-shirts, find your company and learn more about you?
Yeah, absolutely. Lifeforexcellence.com is the website, just spelled out, Life for Excellence. And they can find all the information and on Life Tees on there. And there's actually some cool stories of each athlete and why they've chosen their charities and what impact they hope to make with these organizations. You can also follow us on social media. Our tag is at Life for Excellence, but this time it's at Life for XLNS. So LIFEFORXLNS.
We'll link all these up in the show notes too.
Sounds great. And just on that, it's really our platform on social media is to hopefully inspire people, because I believe that inspiration is the first of a cascade of many positive effects in people's lives. So we try to create a bit of inspiration there. And also, the bigger our communities are on social media, the more impact that we can make across the board. So it's really cool. Like, we're not out there to try and get as many likes as we can and as many shares and many Facebook friends. It's more about making an actual impact. The bigger our community is, the more of an impact that we can make. And that's essentially what we're here for.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time today, mate. I'll make sure to link everything you mentioned, as well as the Happiness Trap book, in the show notes, so people can check that out as well. Brett, have an awesome time overseas, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Brendan, for having me.
This has been Beyond the Buzz with Brendan Osborne. Thanks for listening.